Elizabeth Alicia versus Cook County and Thomas Start. Mr. Duray.
Good morning, Matt Duray for the plaintiff's appellants. May it please the court. As this court, sitting en banc, recognizes in Henry, individuals in custody retain Fourth Amendment right to bodily privacy. Indeed, all individuals, regardless of whether they're in custody, should be entitled to a basic level of respect for their human dignity. In this case, however, the Cook County and its sheriff deprived plaintiffs and other detainees of that basic human right when it recorded them using the toilet in its holding cells. Nevertheless, in the proceeding below, the district court held that defendant's conduct was legally permissible. And for the reasons I'll explain, that decision should be reversed.
Before you jump into the merits, a question about standing and which of your clients has standing to sue, because as I understand the record, only one of the plaintiffs can identify the holding cell that she was held in one of the Cook County courthouses that had a security camera that was positioned in such a way as to be able to see behind the barrier.
Yes, Your Honor. So I understand the question, and Your Honor's right that there is some there's the record is unclear as to several of the plaintiffs precisely which holding cells they were in and precisely which holding cells were recorded. There is no dispute that at least one of the plaintiffs, Plaintiff Alicia, was in a holding cell that was recorded, that the toilet area is visible. So as far as standing for the case at large, I don't believe that's an issue. There may be individualized issues with respect to some of the other plaintiffs. However, as noted in the briefing, there were some issues with discovery where we were doing class discovery and never had a chance to do discovery on individual claims in connection with the motion for summary judgment.
Why would that be a class discovery issue? Assuming your representation is accurate, standing of a named plaintiff for adequacy of representation purposes is squarely within class discovery.
You're right, Your Honor. So the issue was twofold. Number one, it was the scope of discovery, but the other issue was that, you know, towards the end of discovery, there were documents and photos and videos that were not turned over towards the end of discovery. Plaintiffs moved to compel three different times those motions. The first two motions were granted in part, at least with respect to the documentation and photographs and stuff that would have allowed the plaintiffs to identify the cells that they were in and identify precisely where what cells had cameras that would have allowed them to determine with certainty precisely where they were held. But at a certain point, the court ordered that discovery was closed. We asked, notwithstanding that because the motion to compel had been granted, that defendant be required to produce that information anyways, and the court flatly rejected that request. So
you agree that Ramos, Meadows, and Tortilla, those main plaintiffs, there's nothing in the record that supports that they were actually in a holding cell that had a camera in it that picked up images of them, anybody who's in the toilet. And
there
only Alicia was identified.
So far in the record, to my knowledge, that is correct, Your Honor. That doesn't mean that they weren't. I just want to be clear. There might not be
we're
something.
We're here on appeal, and the question is standing. So without that, I don't know how you have standing as to those.
I understand your Honor's standing point. I guess what I would say is that one of the remedies that we asked for, to the extent that, you know, there are just open issues of fact like that, that the case be remanded for further discovery on those issues. And if it turns out that there isn't standing for purposes of summary judgment, that that ruling would could be appropriate. But, you know, at this point, our contention would be that because discovery hasn't been completed and that remains an open issue, that if further discovery was right now, the issue of standing is the allegations and the complaint. I understand that summary judgment was decided, but our point is, if summary judgment had not been reached and we were allowed to do discovery, they would have had standing at least for purposes of getting to this point in the trial, because those allegations were made in the complaint that they were recorded. But your point's taken, Your Honor. But in any event, Plaintiff Alicia unquestionably does have standing because those are not concerns for her. So I'll continue with the merits, at least with respect to her.
And with respect to her, can you provide us with your best argument as to why the plaintiff Alicia has an objective expectation of privacy of using the toilet in the holding cell?
Well,
I understand that there were barriers between the toilet area and the rest of the holding cell, and that's where she was in. But what about with regard to the objective aspect of?
Well, Your Honor, on that point, I would say, you know, there's plenty of case law cited in the brief. There's plenty of decisions. And what I would say is, when it comes to the objective expectation of privacy, it's really based on what society would view as being reasonable. And frankly, as members of this, of a civilized society, as members of a community that we understand the issues with incarceration, we understand the issues and the needs of punishment and deterrence and all that. I would say that even still, as a civilized society, people would be willing to recognize, society in general would be willing to recognize, that individuals have a right to privacy while using the toilet.
Would that also be true not only in holding cells, but say in the jails and prisons themselves? So in other words, to the extent, is your argument that to the extent that currently in prison, there is no barrier in the individual cells between a toilet and the prisoner's living quarters, that somehow violates their Fourth Amendment expectation of privacy rights?
Well, Your Honor, and this is one of the issues I was going to get to. When it comes to the reasonableness of the search and to the factors that are considered as far as the objective expectation of privacy, again, there's other factors that come in as far as what the security interests are, how frequent the observations were.
Well, and I think, counsel, that goes to the reasonableness of the action, the reasonableness of the search, the extent of the search. But the first question is whether or not there is a reasonableness of privacy. Right? That's the first prong of the test. And so to establish that, you have to establish subjective basis of privacy and the objective. And I'm trying to ask you, again, with regard to the objective, where does that come from?
So the reason that I mentioned those other factors is because the objective is based on society, and it's based on what ordinary society members would deem would be reasonable. And what I'm saying is, the reason those other factors come into play is because It's one thing for a person who is in a prison setting that has a toilet area that's open to the public, where there's not constantly a camera monitoring him. There's not constantly a guard sitting outside. They're only sharing a cell with maybe one other person, and they have the ability to make a conscious choice as to whether or not they're going to use the toilet. They have the ability to shield themselves. They know where the vision, where the lines of sight are. And frankly, at that point, they've already been tried and convicted, and there is different security interests, and there's different justifications. Whereas when you're in, so I understand what Your Honor is saying as far as would it be reasonable in a one type of cell versus another type of cell? I guess what I'm saying is that all these contextual things all depend as far as what society would deem would be reasonable and the objective expectation of privacy. That's not to mention that there are also barriers up. There's you know, there were, you know, there's a guard at ground level that, you know, is shielded from those things. So I would say for all of those reasons, not only, you know, the subjective and the objective kind of go hand in hand here, only because, you know, they're all factors that, you know, both plaintiffs individually, when they were, you know, making the choice to use the facilities at the, in the holding cells, but also as, you know, society in determining what a reasonable expectation would be, would also consider those factors as well.
Does the prison's policy play into the objective reasons? Namely, they're directed not to, to look at anybody in a state of undress, and really reinforces that any viewing here was inappropriate.
So, Your Honor, and I understand I'm going to my rebuttal time, so I'll try to be brief just to address your question. Those policies, I understand that on one hand it could be viewed as you know, these viewings were inadvertent or occasional, but on the other hand, it shows how unnecessary it was to actually record people using the toilets. It shows that there is no security interest to actually observe that part of the prison cell without obscuring it, without, you know, making any sort of accommodation to protect the privacy while using the toilet. So I'll elaborate more on that in just a moment, but you know, I would say that those policies, you know, demonstrate that this policy was unreasonable and violated the expectation of privacy. So with that, I'll reserve my time. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Burns.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Daniel Burns on behalf of defendants Cook County and Thomas Dart. Detainees have failed to put forth evidence that they were subjected to a search for purposes of the Fourth Amendment. Absent a search, there can be no Fourth Amendment violation. Moreover, the detainees had no reasonable expectation in the courthouse holding cells, where they were placed with other detainees following trips to and from court, and each detainee testified under oath that they saw cameras present in the cells. To the extent this court finds that the detainees were searched and that they had a reasonable expectation of privacy, any search was nevertheless justified by significant institutional concerns. The district court properly granted summary judgment in favor of the defendants.
Is it your position that the videotaping was justified by security reasons or something else? You seem to take different positions during the litigation.
So, yes, we monitor the holding cell. That's our interest in holding the cell. It's not
the toilet area in particular.
Is it
your argument that there's a security reason to capture video in the toilet area, or that just inadvertently got videotaped as part of monitoring the cell?
It was inadvertently monitored while monitoring the holding cell itself. Correct. The reason, and also too, this.
So are you saying that it's your position now that there is no governmental interest in not blocking out the area of the holding cell that has the toilets? Because I understand that there's some evidence that in some courthouses, right, there's like a black patch, or they somehow kind of blur out the area where the toilet is. So are you saying that system would be sufficient to satisfy all of the governmental interests in monitoring the holding cell?
So first, let me say, there is no interest in monitoring detainees using the toilet. That's not what we're doing. It's to monitor the cell, and inadvertently that there is some, not all, some cells you can see the toilet area. As to your question regarding blocking that out, each facility is different, and that's up to determine what is necessary to provide institutional security safety at the same time balancing rights of detainees. So now we have cameras in, you know, cells that are differently configured, different age of buildings. So they're put in a way where we can monitor the cell itself. So for example, the black boxes, that was a decision made based on the facility itself, which wasn't a part of the complaint here, as the plaintiffs alleged courthouse holding cells. I believe the black box was at the Maywood 24-hour lockup facility, which was separate from what is alleged in the complaint. But in terms of the Fourth Amendment search, they have not put forth any evidence that they were even subjected to a search. They pretty much base it just on speculation. The fact that they were in a cell, that there was cameras, and they used the bathroom, they extrapolate that to say that they're somehow searched. There's just simply no evidence of that. The search policy is written. It allows...
Did they ever get evidence that the, given that the video recording is destroyed after the 20 days?
30 days, Your Honor, but...
How would they ever be able to get evidence when they were actually captured?
Well, they could, take certain depositions to find out if someone admitted to seeing it, if there was an incident that occurred in the cell and camera footage was preserved. They could possibly demonstrate it that way if they were in the same cell when something happened. But
I'm not sure why you're framing your argument as a sufficiency of the evidence argument as opposed to a legal argument that security cameras in holding cells are not a search. And if they are a search, they are reasonable because of the security concerns that exist in every inch of any jail or prison property. So this is not a sufficiency of the evidence kind of a case, except to the extent that it bears on the question of standing. But beyond that, I understood your argument to be a legal one, that as a matter of law, the use of a security camera in a holding cell that happens to incidentally capture some area behind the screen, the privacy screen for the toileting facility, is not a search as a matter of law, not as a matter of fact.
Sure, correct. Yeah, and I was pointing that out, that there's nothing to even indicate that these particular individuals were also...
A factual argument. Let's focus on the legal argument.
Sure, and first, the detainees here have no reasonable expectation in this courthouse holding cells. They're brought in, they go to court, they come back, they interact with different people. We don't know what happens, contraband, etc.
But Mr. Burns, I guess following up on Chief Judge Sykes' question, why wouldn't a camera recording of a holding cell be legally a search?
Because there's a very good chance, in fact, most of the time, they're not even viewed. It's destroyed after 30 days.
If the government comes, puts a camera in my house and records us, but there's a policy, and maybe the government viewed it, maybe they didn't. You're saying that that would not constitute a search because of the possibility that it might not be viewed?
Well, first off, obviously, Judge Lee, you're not a pretrial detainee, so obviously that factor reduces any reasonable expectation.
But we're not talking about, so that's one prong. We talked about that, right? So what the first prong is, if there's reasonable expectation of privacy. One part, the next step is, was there a search, right? And you're saying there was no search, that this, as a matter of law, there was no search, because recording the holding cell cannot in itself ever constitute a search legally if it might not be viewed. I think that's your argument, right?
Yes.
And so my question to you is, well, if the government puts a camera in my home and it has a policy saying, well, if we need this later, we might take a look at it. But, unless someone needs it, we'll destroy it in 30 days. So you're saying under that factual scenario, that hypothetical, that the government recording the goings on in my house would not constitute a search?
Well, Judge Lee, in your scenario, obviously the home has obviously been protected under the Fourth Amendment. There's plenty of case law showing how that is a source of protection, where here this is a public space. There's other detainees held in these holding cells. These are individuals that are going to and from court. So in your scenario...
Certainly you would admit, though, that if a guard came into the holding cell and did a strip search, right, of a detainee, that would constitute a search.
A strip search? Sure. Right. Yes.
In the holding cell.
Yes.
So it's not the fact that it's in a holding cell versus a house that prevents it from being a search, because guards can do searches in a holding cell, right? So my question is, what is it about the recording that takes it out of the category of a search?
Well, again, it would be the fact that it's not viewed. And also, as this court has held, that to search means to look through something, to find something. This is incidental recordings that aren't going to be viewed unless there's an
argument. inadvertent nature of this, an incidental nature that took it out of the search based on some of our precedent.
Right, right. It's the incidental nature that there's no intent to search, that these cameras...
It has nothing to do with subjective intent.
The
search occurs when the government violates a subjective expectation of privacy that society recognizes as reasonable. Let's assume there's a subjective expectation of privacy. The pivot point in the argument ought to be that there is no objective expectation of privacy in a prison cell, because that's in fact what the Supreme Court has held and what we have held, and nothing we said in the Hewlett versus Henry case about strip searches eliminated that doctrine, nor could we. The Supreme Court has said that prison cells and jail cells, pretrial detainees, there is no reasonable expectation of privacy as an objective matter.
Correct, yes. And, you know, obviously the presence of cameras that everyone sees, you know, further supports that.
Right. So if a guard walking by can see into a corner of the toileting facility in the holding cell, that's not a search any more than a camera that's fixed on the wall that can see into a corner of the toileting facility part of the cell is a search. Legal question, not a factual question about who intended what. Right. How many times the camera feed was viewed by a guard who was in the control room. None of that matters. This is a facial challenge, you know, a facial kind of a challenge to the use of security cameras in holding cells.
Yes, held by pretrial detainees.
Okay, now that I've made your argument for you, maybe kind of get back on track.
Well, I'm not sure I can improve on that anymore, Chief Judge said. But again, and to the final, even if the court considers this search and that there is a reasonable expectation of privacy, it is justified by the needs of the facilities and the sheriff. Specifically, and probably two examples work best, if, for example, there is an allegation of misconduct leveled against a guard, we can go back in the camera footage, see what happened, and that can inform any disciplinary proceedings, any criminal proceedings that may happen. If there's a medical emergency, we want to know what happened, we can go back, pull the camera, and find out what happened. And that serves a very strong security interest for Sheriff Dart in Cook County, especially in the detainee holding facilities.
Right, because the security risks don't stop at the bathroom door, for lack of a better way of putting it. Security risks can occur inside of the toileting facilities as well, insofar as they relate to weapons, contraband, other
sure
things that can be smuggled into the jail.
Absolutely. And, you know, the fact that they may be searched before doesn't diminish that, because they go out of the cell into court, encounter other people before they come back too. So for all those reasons, any search, if the court finds a search, again, it was reasonable under the circumstances here. If there are any further questions, I ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Durang.
Thank you. So I'd like to address first what Judge Sykes just mentioned. So I understand the Supreme Court's holding at Hudson and some of the prior precedent under this court, but I do want to point out that in Henry, this court explicitly noted that Hudson left open the question of whether and to what extent prisoners maintain a right of privacy in their bodies, and favorably quoted from the Sparks case that Hudson does not establish that the interior of one's body is as open to the invasion as one's prison cell. So on that point, I would say that while I understand that the scope of the Fourth Amendment within the context of a larger prison cell is established by Henry and other precedent, this court in particular, but I don't think that decision applies to the bodily privacy issue that we have in this case. I on that point, you know, so the excuse me, The next thing I want to point out is that, you know, if there was simply the fact that someone is in a custodial setting where there is surveillance, if that were sufficient to extinguish any right of privacy, including bodily privacy, then decisions in Henry and Canadian and other cases like that, where courts have found that violations of the right to bodily privacy are Fourth Amendment violations.
In the context of strip searches.
I understand, Your Honor. It was in the context of... It doesn't involve strip searches, but it involves, you know, conduct that is equally as degrading and demeaning as a strip search would be. There's plenty of authority that talk about there's plenty of cases that talk about how the same interests that are implicated in strip searches are implicated when an individual is trying to use the toilet. The next thing I want to note is that, you know, there is authority talking about, you know, one can create a temporary zone of privacy, even in a place where there may not be an expectation of privacy as to, you know, other types of invasions. So that was the Takeda case. There's also the Katz case where, you know, the U.S. Supreme Court said, you know, an individual in a closed in phone booth may not have an expectation of privacy from being visually observed, but he does have an expectation of privacy against being audio recorded. So
those are not prison cases or jail cases.
I understand, Your Honor, but
they're contextually very different. So those general principles that apply to society at large do not apply here.
Your Honor, I understand your point, but I think that, you know, they're still analogous to the position.
Not even close.
The other thing I want to note is, you know, defendants here admit that their observation was inadvertent. So, you know, they're saying that there was no need to record people using the toilet. There was no need for them to have done this at all. Yes, there was a need to monitor their holding cells, but, you know, as Judge Lee pointed out, that, you know, they have the ability to do that without invading, you know, people's privacy in such a demeaning and dehumanizing way. I on that point, I do want to point out that, you know, in cases such as Johnson and the other authority that's cited in the brief talking about incidental viewing being acceptable, though all those decisions were based on a weighing of the needs and the justifications and the scope of the search versus all the other factors. Whereas here we have defendant explicitly admitting that there was no justification. So even though those cases say that one thing is appropriate, doesn't necessarily mean that in this context, the similar thing was appropriate. So for those reasons, Your Honor, and the reasons set forth in the briefing, we ask that the case be reversed and remanded as we requested. Thank you.
Thank you. Our thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and we'll move to our third case this morning.